You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. This is episode 25. We've been doing a whole lot of political discussion recently. We've needed to, since, well, there's a lot going on. That's part of liberalism, folks, the discussion of politics. And here we, of course, do it with a particular focus on the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. However, with all the political talk we've been doing, the gun part of the Liberals' Gun Corner has been a little bit lacking. Even I've noticed it. So we're going to fix that right now. There have been a few questions about lever guns. Yeah, and what to get. Someone over on ammosmith.com and someone else over on the Liberal Gun Club forums, they both asked about these. They were asking, you know, what would be a good one to get? You know, caliber, brand, barrel length, all the usual stuff. I'm seeing a particular interest in two chamberings. The 30-30, and that's with good reason, that's the traditional one, and the 357 Magnum. Seems there's a whole lot of interest in specifically 357 Magnum lever guns of late. So, we're going to talk about one of my lever gun rifles, the Rossi Model 92 in 357 Magnum. And hopefully I can make a case for you to consider this specific model. Now, in episode 15, we talked about the benefits of lever guns chambered for revolver cartridges generally. If you're hunting at distances within 125 yards, I almost said 150. It's really more like 125. Such a rifle is worthy of your consideration. We're focusing on the Rossi 92 this particular time for a couple of reasons. One, I've had it for about a year now, so I can actually speak somewhat intelligently about it. And two, it's probably the most affordable of the lever guns. We've already talked before about the ballistic benefits of shooting 357 Magnum cartridges out of rifle-length barrels. The cartridge takes on a whole new level of power when you do that. You're actually starting to nip at the heels of the good old 30-30 Winchester in terms of power. And I remind you that the 30-30 is an actual rifle round. Seriously, I'm getting over 1,700 feet per second with this thing. And I could safely push it to 1,800 with my 158 grain cast bullet. Let's do a little comparison, shall we? I've talked about my Ruger Security 6 on a few occasions. That thing is a terrific revolver. I'm pretty sure it's an old police trade-in. Therefore, like you would imagine on a police gun, it's got a 4-inch barrel. Out of this revolver, the 158 grain cast bullet comes out at, oh, right around 1,200 feet per second with my standard 357 Magnum loading. Assuming I did the energy calculation right, let's hope I did, that translates to 507 pound-feet. That's one reason it's got the downright there reputation that the police liked a lot. But what about the rifle? Well, the velocity goes up by about 500 feet per second out of the rifle. Comes out of the muzzle at just over 1,700 feet per second. Calculating the kinetic energy at that velocity, we get 1,019 pound-feet. Whoa, wait, that's double. That's double the power we got out of the revolver. What gives? What's up with that? Remember, kinetic energy is one-half the mass times the square of velocity. That means you've got a geometric increase in energy, and that is a big-time benefit. That's why your power level doubled with a quote-unquote only a 500 foot per second increase in velocity. Folks, forget about Bambi. That's enough power to put down an elk if you're close enough. That's a lot of power. And that's what the 357 Magnum in a rifle will get you. At these power levels, assuming you do your part, the 357 Magnum will definitely drop that deer right there. Yep, DDRT. Dead deer right there. Bambi, he's what's for dinner. We're going to take just a short pause for a station ID break, and when we get back, we'll jump into why these neat little rifles are so hard to find. Stick around, we're just getting started.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
We're back. We're talking about the benefits of the 357 Magnum Carbine, specifically the 16-inch barrel Rossi Model 92. We just mentioned power levels and that within its range limitations, it's certainly enough to drop a deer. Now let's get into the other major benefit. That would be that these things will shoot .38 Special very well, too. You want to hunt rabbits or other small game? And you actually want some meat left for dinner? No problem. Just stoke your rifle with some .38 Special, some light .38 Special, and down goes little old Thumper. Recoil? Please. Feels just like shooting a .22. And that's why it's so popular in the cowboy action shooting circuit. And therefore, why they're so hard to find. Low recoil means easier to shoot and easier to score points in competition. Cowboy action shooting, turns out, has become pretty popular. And these cowboy action shooters are just snapping the rifles up like that. Now, not to say there aren't plenty of manufacturers making them. Oh, we got all sorts of brands. We got, let's see here, what do we got? Chiappa, Puma, Pieta, Uberti, Marlin, and of course, the granddaddy of them all, Winchester. Well, given all that, so how come I'm talking about the Rossi? I know, Rossi, you know, the cheap gun, right? Made by Taurus. You know, they bought Rossi a few years back, and now they sell firearms under both the Taurus and the Rossi names. And of course, we all know Taurus sucks. Well, not so fast there, partner. Better we mosey on down to the range and take her for a little ride before we pass a judgment like that thar. And folks, that's just what I done did. Here's the short answer. This little Rossi's a winner. Now, what's the longer answer? Here it is. We just got through talking about the ballistic benefits based on the barrel length. I'm going to tell you something. The 357 Magnum cartridge reaches maximum velocity at right around 14 to 16 inches. That means the length of the rifle I'm holding right now is about perfect for the cartridge. You don't need to go to, 20 or 24, anything like that. So you get pretty much max power. You might, maybe get 50 feet per second more with a 24-inch barrel. But my God, you're going to be traipsing through the woods and hitting everything. So you got your longer barrel. And for this cartridge, it's long enough. There is a myth, though, about accuracy and longer barrel length. And it is a myth. Let's talk about that myth. Some people say, well, you got a longer sight radius with the longer barrel, or maybe the longer the bullet is in the barrel, that's going to help your accuracy. Really, it's precision, but oh well. Why quibble? That is false. You're going to get the same level of precision out of a 16-inch barrel that you will out of a 20 or a 24. So why do people even get these longer barrels? Here's the actual benefits of a longer barrel. You get two things. First, magazine capacity. Why? Because these tubular magazines are typically made to the same length, at least in lever guns chambered for revolver cartridges, as the barrel length. So that means you're going to get a 20-inch long magazine, tubular magazine, and say a 20-inch rifle. Same with the 24, you're going to get a 24-inch magazine. That means you can fit more rounds in there. The second benefit is theoretical. To a degree, you get more velocity. But here's the thing. This is not the 7mm Remington Magnum round. That round is a very powerful, long-range round. You really need minimum a 24-inch barrel to burn all that powder and get the maximum ballistic benefit out of it. And really, you do better with a 26 or 28-inch barrel with a round like that. Powders for the 357 Magnum, by contrast, we're talking 2400, H110, W296. They've pretty much finished burning right around 14 inches. So you're not going to get more velocity if you keep going with a 357 Magnum rifle past about 16 inches. Therefore, you might as well just stick with a 16. Here's one thing you do get, though. Say you do want to increase your magazine capacity. No problem. Just use 38 special cases. I've got a load that basically equals 357 Magnum power in a 38 special plus P case. With the shorter 38 special case, you get one more round of magazine capacity. That means instead of 8 rounds plus 1, I get 9 plus 1. That's pretty good. Okay, still we're talking about, generalities. We're not talking specifically about the Rossi. Let's do that now. What are my impressions of this rifle here that I'm holding? And this is it. Bang! Ha ha ha. I just feel just like a cowboy here. Well, I bought a brand new gun. And that's pretty much what you're going to be buying because you can't hardly find these things on the used market. They're just too darn popular. Like I said, the cowboy action shooters are snapping them up like instantly. So that means we're talking, in most cases, a new gun. They are a little stiff when they're new. The action is your typical Winchester-style Model 92. Hammer comes back once you activate the lever, all that stuff. That's easy to deal with. The stiffness is easy to deal with. What you do is you simply actuate the thing maybe, 100 times a night for a couple of weeks, and it slicks things out considerably. That's what I did with mine. It's got a little safety up top here, right above where the hammer goes. Now, this is not like the Marlin safety, that crossbar safety, or the Winchester, the new Winchester one that they came out with that just looks really ugly. This is a small, unobtrusive little thing. Basically, you flip it from S to F, and it sits right on top of the bolt that moves here. Okay, what it does is it stops the firing pin from moving forward all the way once you pull the trigger. Doesn't move at all. Now, you can half cock this thing, flip the safety off to fire, recock it, and bang, there it goes. It's pretty easy to deal with, so I really don't have a problem with it. Sights. These are your traditional buckhorn type of sights, the same type that you would see on a cowboy gun from back in the day on a Winchester Model 94. Now, remember I mentioned the hammer? Turns out these buckhorn sights, if you don't cock the hammer back, the top of the hammer does block the view of the rear sight a bit. So you really should cock it back. Of course, in practice, it's not going to be a big deal because guess what? You're only going to be pointing something after you've actuated the lever and chamming around. So just actuate the lever, and you're done. Oh, and this rear sight here can come off, by the way. Why would we want to take it off? Because of what we can replace it with. It turns out that there's a what's called a scout mount available for these little 92s. It's, about $20. What it lets you do is it lets you mount basically a long eye relief scope, a so-called scout or pistol scope. Once your eyes start getting older like mine are starting to do, you might start thinking about that. Now, how does it shoot? Well, pretty darn nicely, actually. My eyes are still good enough to where I can use the iron sights at a reasonable distance. And I can get pretty good groups with the darn thing. Since I'm a reloader, I like to shoot this thing a lot, and I can afford to go practice with it on a regular basis, which leads me to another thing. No matter how gently you activate the lever, the thing's going to eject the brass a fair amount. It likes to throw the brass. Now, I understand that there are ways to deal with that so it doesn't throw it nearly as far, but it does throw it for you hand loaders. Think of it sort of like a Mini 14 does. It's just the vertical version thereof because it is a top eject. Now, for the reason that I'm talking about the Rossi specifically in the first place, how much is the gun? Well, there are two types. The blued version and the stainless version. Mine's the stainless version, but I would have been perfectly happy with a blued version too because they shoot just as well and they're just as tough. The stainless one, that just happens to be the one that we happened to get into the shop. So I jumped on it. Blued rifles, you can get them for about, $450. The stainless one like mine, those are a little more. They're about $100 more, about $550 or so. That's not bad for a fun little rifle that you can save a lot of money, especially with hand loading and with inexpensive ammo anyways. Remember I was talking before about how well it shoots? Well, 25 yards, I can get the shots within an inch. That's good enough for deer or pig hunting, especially out east where the woods are, kind of thick and brushy. The price on this thing which for me was about, I don't know, $550, allowed me to get into a good all-metal quality lever gun that is a whole lot of fun to shoot. And, you know, except I think for the follower, this little Rossi is in fact all-metal. I'm not finding any other plastic in it besides the follower. The wood, yes, it has real wood on it. It looks like it's straight grain walnut. You know, some might say it's kind of boring grain, but I kind of like straight grain walnut, too. It's got a matte finish on it, the wood does. This way you don't go signaling, flashing your game animal with your reflection going, hey, I'm here, I'm about to kill you. That way you actually have something for dinner. I've mentioned the difficulty of finding these things, especially on the used market. Here's the major reason why. Cowboy action shooters love these kinds of rifles for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're legal for cowboy action competition because they have a pre-1999 design. That means they're eligible. You can actually use these. They're allowed in those competitions. Anything like, say, a Ruger Model 96 or a Savage 99, it's not allowed. These Rossis in the Winchester style, anything in the Winchester style is. The cowboy action shooters like to shoot light 38 special rounds because they can make quicker follow-up shots. Turns out it shoots light 38 special very well. That means more points. Therefore, people are not selling these. They're also just plain fun. And that's why they're tough to find. At least on the used market. But you can find them new. You still got to look, though. If you are thinking about a nice, easy rifle to shoot, where the ammo's easy to get, it's the same ammo you buy for your revolver, easy to hand load for, all that good stuff. And by the way, we'll talk about hand loading the 357 and the 38 Special in a future episode. If you're thinking about all those benefits, you might want to think about one of these little Rossi 92s. For $450, you can get into a pretty darn nice rifle and have a lot of fun with it. We'll take a short station ID break and we'll be right back.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
Last weekend, had some family come in and visit. Mother and stepfather. We went to go see that new movie, Captain Phillips. Yeah, that one. It just came out. We know the outcome, of course, because it's based on the true story of the real-life ship, the Maersk, Alabama. It's Captain Richard Phillips and his capture at the hands of Somali pirates. I definitely recommend this movie. One thing that the members of the crew were frustrated about was that they weren't allowed to have any rifles on board to stop the pirates. I mean, they saw them coming, but they weren't allowed to have anything. Pirates, of course, were armed to the teeth. They had some Kalashnikov rifles, and in the movie there was a 1911 pistol they had as well. Now, my mother and stepfather aren't exactly what you'd call pro-gun. Matter of fact, my mother opposed me even having a BB gun when I was a kid. Big time. Didn't want me having anything to do with a gun of any sort. Oh, no. Well, she's sort of come around to the fact that I'm a proud liberal firearms enthusiast. At least she doesn't talk against it. I'll give her that. My stepfather, on the other hand, oh, how would he put it? Has concerns. Yeah, that's how he put it. Well, that's a pretty fine how do you do there, since he is himself a gun owner, too. Go figure. Well, anyway, even they were astounded about why someone aboard that ship didn't have a rifle. Something besides just water hoses to drive those pirates away. They kind of went on about this, as a matter of fact. They were saying, how come they weren't allowed to have a weapon when there are pirates out there? So, after all that, I asked my stepfather, now do you understand why I believe what I do about the Second Amendment? He didn't really want to answer that. So I kind of pushed a little. Do you? He saw I couldn't get out of it, so his response was, well, yes, but what I oppose is this idea of having machine guns being carried by criminals in our schools. Then he went on to try to put qualifications on what he had just said about firearms on the ships going through dangerous waters. This man is far from stupid. Matter of fact, he's exceedingly intelligent. What happened there was he realized the contradiction in his own position, and he felt like he had to try to salvage a quote-unquote win against me somehow. Whoops. Folks, remember how we've talked before about the antis using emotion instead of rationality and logic? What you just heard is one of the effects. See, out in California, I can tell you this from experience. All they hear is, guns bad, guns bad. They hear the narrative from the likes of Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Nancy Pelosi, Jerry Brown, Kevin DeLeon, and others all just like them. Same narrative started decades ago by State Assemblyman Don Mulford and Governor Ronald Reagan back in the 60s. Over and over again for 45 years now. That's my entire lifetime, by the way. And remember what I pointed out about repetition. You keep whispering something in people's ears over and over again. Well, eventually they come to believe it. I'm serious, folks. It's true. That's how we got this notion from way back in the day that brown folks are inferior to white folks. It got repeated over and over again. Well, it's the same thing with anything else, including the anti-gun position. Now, I tell you this little story about my parents because it leads into something I just recently found out about. This is just a couple days ago I learned about it. Something that kind of concerns me. Turns out that just 2 months ago, on August 2nd, 2013, the Department of Homeland Security, along with the Department of Justice, published something they call a roll call release. Apparently it's some sort of alert to law enforcement agencies throughout the country. Look out for this, you may see it. One of those things. Well, this particular roll call release is an alert saying that possession of large amounts of weapons or ammunition, and includes some other things too, they're saying that this, and I quote, could indicate pre-operational terrorist attack planning or criminal activity. Well, I personally don't know anyone who doesn't want to stop an actual terrorist from killing people or actual criminals from doing bad stuff. I think we all agree stopping that's a good thing. Now, here's the rub, though. This is what apparently the DHS and the DOJ consider large amounts of weapons or ammunition. This is listed in the roll call release. Two people in a car got pulled over, and the cops searched the vehicle. The cops found four pistols, one shotgun, two rifles, and about 5,000 rounds of ammunition. The police arrested both the driver and the passenger for the charge of weapons possession. Now, I don't know any more details of this arrest because, well, the DHS and the DOJ didn't tell us. They didn't include any of that detail on the roll call release. Maybe there was something else going on there. I don't know because they didn't say. But as someone who knows several competitive shooters, I can tell you this. Seven firearms and 5,000 rounds of ammunition is hardly unreasonable. On the contrary, there's this competition called Three Gun. Maybe you've heard of it. For those of you who haven't, each participant, here's what it's about. Each participant is required to compete in the pistol, rifle, and shotgun classes. That's why it's called that. You are literally competing with three types of guns. I've seen these competitions before. Participants go through a lot of rounds. So 5,000 rounds for a competition between a few people isn't really that much. Let's also remember something else. You want to score well? Then you need to practice. That means plenty of range time. Jerry Michalek is a world-class competitor. So is his wife, Kay Clark-Michalek. Oh, and their daughter competes now, too. The Michalek family goes through so much ammo in a month that it's ridiculous. I mean, you ought to see how they reload ammo. And that's just to stay in practice so they can actually win competitions. Obviously, I don't know every competitor out there in this country. I don't even know of every competitor out there in this country. But I do know there's only one thing to stay at the top of your game, and there ain't no substitute for it. Practice, practice, practice. No matter what competitive sport you've chosen, you've got to practice. That's how you win. Now, for all we know, those two people that the DHS and the DOJ talked about in that roll call release, they may well have been bad folks. but they might just as well have been marksmanship competitors on their way to a range practice session too. We don't know. And that's the problem. That's the point. We don't know. All I've got is this alert that the feds published. It says that 7 firearms and 5,000 rounds of ammunition counts as, quote, possible precursor to terrorist or criminal activity, close quote. And 2 people got arrested for it. The feds didn't even tell us where they were, you know, where this arrest happened. Was it Texas? Was it California? New York? Arizona? Virginia? We don't know. Weapons possession in your car, in and of itself, is not illegal in any part of this country, no matter what some overzealous New Jersey cop wants to spout out. It is not in and of itself illegal. The Firearm Owners Protection Act of 1986 makes that very clear. So there had to be other factors. Had this roll call release said that these 2 people were convicted felons, well, then that would make more sense, of course. But it didn't tell us any of that. So, that poses a very serious question. For those of us who do enjoy the sport of marksmanship, how are you and I supposed to know if we'll be pulled over and reported to DHS for what they deem, quote-unquote, large amounts of firearms and/or ammunition? What happens if, say, you score a nice sale on 9mm, 38 Special, or 45 ACP ammo at the local gun show? And since it's on sale, well, of course you stock up. Hey, if it's on sale, right? You bring home, I don't know, maybe 5,000 rounds of ammo to last you throughout the coming year. You know, because the big gun show comes around once or twice a year. This is a very normal thing anywhere where there are major gun shows. I know that because I just got home from one today. Does this mean the DHS and the DOJ should be looking at you as a possible terrorist or criminal just because you're taking your purchase home in your car? I sure hope not. But lacking any other information, we don't know if that's exactly what could happen. As far as we know, it's happened already. Were those 2 who got arrested in fact terrorists / criminals? Or were they simply firearms enthusiasts? The DHS and the DOJ didn't tell us. In absence of further information, we've got to consider any of those other possibilities that I just gave you. No, this isn't tinfoil hat stuff either. Innocent people have been caught up in dragnets plenty of times before. We all know this. There are lots of examples of that going on here in our country. For you folks in California, remember those 2 Hispanic women that nearly got killed by those trigger-happy cops during the hunt for that former LAPD cop Christopher Dorner? Remember that? Simply because the 2 women's pickup truck kinda sorta resembled Chris Dorner's truck? Y'all remember that out there? I hope so. It occurred earlier just this year, February. Talk about innocent people getting caught up in a dragnet. It's something that we as Americans need to think about. And that's why this roll call release with this assume they're guilty of something mentality concerns me. Remember I mentioned my mother and stepfather before? After we watched that Captain Phillips movie? Here's the sad part. This idea of 7 firearms and or 5,000 rounds of ammunition threshold that the DHS and the DOJ have? My parents would probably heartily agree with the feds on that. That's the sad part. Why? Why would they agree with that, given what I just told you? Well, it's because that's what they've been spoon-fed over and over again. How many other people in this country have been spoon-fed the same sort of thing by government officials and their friends in certain media outlets? We know who we're talking about. Yeah, okay, fine, I'll give you a few examples. The San Francisco Chronicle, that's definitely not pro-Second Amendment. Neither is the Chicago Tribune. Neither NBC or CNN. And we all know about Michael Bloomberg's news empire. And, oh, let's not even get to talking about the New York Times. We know what they're like, too. Over and over again with that drumbeat. And that's why people like my parents react the way that they do, even when they themselves are gun owners. So what are we going to do about it? That's what I ask people a lot when they don't like something. They complain about it. Okay, what are you going to do about it? Well, there's this little thing called a midterm election coming up in exactly 1 year from now. Here's a suggestion. How about we who enjoy marksmanship use that year to our advantage? Yeah, how about it? How about we press our representatives and senators to get some clarity from both the DHS and the DOJ on this roll call release of theirs that we just talked about? Yes, folks, that's our job as citizens to do that. I obviously don't expect the California, New York, or New Jersey contingents in the Congress to follow up on this, but how about someone in, I don't know, say Texas or Arizona or Vermont, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Missouri, Montana, places like that? You know, places where marksmanship has a strong tradition, even among the politicians. Now, heck, how about this? The CEOs of Remington, Ruger, and S&W, Colt, the major manufacturers. That's something they could do that would be helpful. And, oh, by the way, that's not just pie in the sky either. Ruger's CEO in particular has seemed very willing to lobby our elected officials. You know, come to think of it, this is something that members of the NRA would do well to press their leadership on. Chris Cox needs to be up in the face of representatives and senators asking him about this. Larry Pratt over at the Gun Owners of America, he ought to be doing it too. He's a former congressional representative. He's got those connections. So, hey, you members of the GOA, you too might want to contact your organization there and let them know about this. It's Station ID time again. We'll be right back in just a moment.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards and PayPal accounts are not required. GunRightsRadio.com.
If you've been a regular listener over the last few months, then you know that we've been featuring people from places where there is no right to keep and bear arms. Concept doesn't exist over there. Earlier this year, January 2013, right after the Sandy Hook massacre, there were several bills proposed in Connecticut. Gee, big surprise. All of them were against the right to keep and bear arms, all these new bills. Well, there's a fellow named Mr. Henson Ong, an immigrant from an unnamed East Asian country, and, as he puts it, American by choice. Well, he decided to go to the Connecticut State Legislature and tell them what he thought of these laws. I'm guessing from his surname of Ong that he's originally from China. Well, today he is a resident of Connecticut and a citizen of this nation. Mr. Ong, take it away.
Henson Ong, followed by Justin Holstrom, Jason Tetlow, Thomas Philippides, number 659. Thank you. Please proceed.
Yeah. My name is Henson Ong. Forgive me, English is not my first language. I am a legal immigrant, and I am an American by choice. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to express my opinion and give my testimony in opposition to the majority of the proposed bills, which do nothing to deter future crimes. Gun control does not work. Your own history is replete with high school rifle teams, Boy Scout, marksmanship merit badges. You could buy rifles at the hardware stores. You could order them, mail order, delivered to your home. Your country was awash in readily available firearms and ammunition. And yet, in your past, you did not have mass school shootings. Other people have already expressed the question, what changed? It was not that the availability of guns suddenly exploded or increased. It actually was decreased. What was changed was societal decay.
Hey.
If gun control actually did work, Washington, D.C. and Chicago would be the safest cities in your nation, but it is not. They have the toughest gun laws and the highest crime and murder rates. Now, some people have asked and called the AR-15. They called the AR-15 a weapon of mass killing. Well, it turns out that there are a few government agencies which disagree with that characterization. The Department of Homeland Security has stated that a rifle chambered in 5.56 NATO with a 30-round magazine is suitable for personal defensive use. I have documentation on that. It is HSCEMS-1212-00011, solicitation for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. Now, who needs an AR-15 with 30-round mags? That question has also been brought up. And I would like to put forward that had the Koreans in the L.A. riots not had AR-15s and AK-47s with 30-round magazines and Ruger 30s, their businesses would have been burned to the ground like all of the other businesses in their neighborhoods. Theirs stood because they stood their ground. I would also put forward the conjecture that had the 10,000 students at Tiananmen Square not been unarmed, things may not have resulted in so many of them disappearing. In your own laws, United States versus Miller, 309, U.S. 174, 1939, it was made clear that the type of firearms protected by the Second Amendment were those specifically useful and common for military use in defense of the state. I would like to note that the state is not the government. The state is the people. In Lewis.
Excuse me, Mr. Andre, if you would.
In Lewis versus United States, 1980, it is stated that the Second Amendment guarantees no right to keep and bear a firearm that does not have some reasonable relationship to the preservation and efficiency of a well-regulated militia. It has nothing to do with hunting. The militia, as per the debates in the convention, shows plainly enough that it is composed of all males physically capable of acting in concert for common defense. And further, that ordinarily, when called for service, these men were expected to appear, bearing arms supplied by themselves and of a kind in common use at the time. The AR-15 is the most common and popular rifle in America at this time.
Would you please wrap up?
I will wrap up. I would like to wrap up with a statement from Judge Andrew Kosniewski, in Silveria v. Lockyer, 2003. My excellent colleagues have forgotten these bitter lessons of history. The prospect of tyranny may not grab the headlines the way vivid stories of gun crime usually do, but few saw the Third Reich coming until it was too late. The Second Amendment is a doomsday provision, one designed only for those exceptionally rare circumstances when all other rights have failed. A free people can only afford to make this mistake once.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, due to emotional pressure from that horrific shooting, many of those bad bills did pass and become law in Connecticut. They wouldn't have done anything to stop what happened in Newtown that day either. That's the sad part. But the politicians in Connecticut can preen themselves and trumpet that they, quote-unquote, did something.
Something, 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 something.
Too bad it was the wrong things, just like Mr. Ong pointed out. Folks, we get the government that we deserve. And if we sit on the sidelines and just take it, whatever the politicians decide to dole out to us, then we'll deserve the resulting government overreach. We've talked before in a previous episode about the question, just how long is the road to a police state? It's a very serious question. It was then and it remains so now. So, as is usually the case here on the Liberals' Gun Corner, you got a good dose of old school liberalism. And you also got a discussion on guns. Next time, as I promised before, we'll talk more about handloading the .38 Special and .357 Magnum rounds, especially for you folks considering that lever gun. After all, what use is a lever gun without a steady supply of ammunition? And what good is that lever gun, or any gun, if either it or the ammunition become, for practical purposes, outlawed or very highly restricted, like in New York and New Jersey now? we get the government that we deserve. Let's make sure we don't deserve anything less than full liberty. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time. Until then, safe shooting, stay aware of what's going on, and thanks for listening.